everyone. My name is Lisa Green. I'm a senior. I'm the Interfaith Fellow working in the office of Chaplain Alex Hendrickson. And welcome to Lafayette's Interfaith Podcast, Cult and Corner. Today, I'm joined by the fabulous, the wonderful Elise. Elise, thank you so much for being here with me.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Of course. So for anybody who doesn't know you, could you just introduce yourself, say like your year, your major, where you're from, and what you're involved in on campus?
Yeah, of course. So my name is Elise Trocker. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a sophomore, double majoring in psychology and religious studies. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I know, long trek to Lafayette, but I'm really loving it here. I'm part of Yarn Club, Hillel, Interfaith Council with Lisa, LRAGE, PASA, the Happiness Club, and I'm also a WAL with the College Writing Center.
Amazing. Well, I'm so excited to dive right in. And yeah, for anybody who doesn't know, who isn't familiar, what would you say is your religious or faith tradition?
So I am a conservative Jew, but for me, that's more of cultural Judaism. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a Jewish household. We had a kosher household. I went to Jewish day school and everything. But in terms of like beliefs of God and things like that, I wouldn't necessarily say that is the religion that I subscribe to. Mm-hmm. For my own personal practices of like exceptional powers and things like that, I definitely say I'm more spiritual.
I'm so excited to dive into that spirituality, where you find it, what it means for you, how elements of Judaism connect to that spirituality. Mm-hmm. But you know, as they say in my fave, The Sound of Music, let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. And just go back to, what would you say your earliest memories of religion were?
Those have to be sitting in my kindergarten classroom at Adat Ariel, which was the Jewish day school that I went to, and like singing songs about creation.
Yeah.
We had an art teacher, and we made these little books based on each day of creation. And just last year, I was going through some old things I had saved, and I found them again. And it just brought back all the memories of like cotton balls for the clouds and like making little flowers for the greenery. I think that's probably the first memory I have related to religion. It's kind of hard to say just because I grew up in a religious household, so all those things kind of blend together.
Yeah, that's so funny. I so did that too at Jewish day school. Do you remember how you felt like making the book?
I think I just thought that it was a fun creative exercise. Yeah. I don't really remember much about like the religious or faith side in terms of what I was feeling. Mm-hmm. When I was going through some of this stuff, I found like journals they would have us write about like how we want to talk to God and like connections with God and things like that. And I genuinely do not ever remember filling any of those things out. So it was almost like I was an outsider looking at what I was writing when I was younger, because I definitely did not remember having those feelings.
Yeah, well, just kind of focusing more on the experience of the art and the creativity. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's very natural just to look at the colors and like,
yeah,
there's so many dimensions to something like that.
Yeah, or it's like the textures, thinking of what it is that was creating. I think it was an element of creating creation within what we were doing. It's like we were learning about creation, and yet we were creating it in our own way with our own hands.
Yeah.
So I think that was the fun part.
You got to really, take ownership, make it your own. That's awesome. And then you were mentioning just growing up in a religious household, so it's hard to pinpoint a specific first memory. That makes a lot of sense. Were your parents like really involved in your religious spiritual growing up?
I think we were a lot more involved when I was younger. So my dad is conservative, and my mom originally was not Jewish, but because she knew how important it was to my dad, before they got married, my mom converted to Judaism.
Oh, wow.
So I was raised with both my mom and my dad following Jewish traditions. Mm-hmm. So what that meant for us is we had a semi-kosher household.
Mm-hmm.
We had different dishware for meat and milk, and we had different silverware for meat and milk. We didn't eat pork, we didn't eat shellfish, we didn't mix meat and dairy. And when I was younger, we used to have Shabbat every Friday. That definitely went away very quickly, I think, once I started growing up and the rest of life kind of took over. We didn't really have the time to slow down on Fridays.
It's a big time commitment. You gotta cook, you gotta get everything ready.
Gotta get the candles, gotta be dressed.
Sure, the wine, it's a whole bit, you know? Like,
yeah.
There, Shabbat, I love it to pieces. It's not casual, you know?
No.
It's not casual Friday.
Yeah, as I got older, sometimes we would throw in, like, on special memorial holidays, we'd have like a short Shabbat, I guess.
Oh,
that was more
yeah.
of we do whatever we were doing for dinner, but we would say blessings and light candles.
Oh, that's nice.
But that I really do see more as like just culturally, it's what we all, or not we all, but my dad and I at least grew up with. So it's
right.
kind of what we would relate back to in times of memorial.
It feels like home.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's so cool about your mom. I
mm-hmm.
wonder, did she ever talk to you about, like, what it was like converting?
Yeah, we actually have talked about this a lot because I was always really interested in religions when I was younger, so I always asked my mom a lot about what it was before being Christian and then converting to Judaism.
Yeah.
And she said she loved the process.
Oh, wow.
Honestly, she said being able to, like, talk to a rabbi, going through the Torah, learning the different commandments, and just really seeing what the Jewish community was about is what convinced her that it was something that she wanted to be with.
Wow.
And I think everyone refers to each religion as a community, but what she always said stood out to her was the actual community element of Judaism. Is that once you were in, every person could be treated like a family member. And once you were in, it was really accepting.
I love that.
Yeah. And she actually probably knows more about certain things within the Torah than my dad does.
Yeah.
Because like me, we went through Jewish day school early on and we're bat and bar mitzvah early on. But my mom learned
it
much later in life. So I think some of those things have stuck with her a lot more.
Yeah, I so believe that. I love converts. I think that, I don't know, the idea that you made an intentional decision.
Yeah.
It's not like you were born into it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that shows just so much dedication.
Yeah, and I think sometimes that's a unique experience, especially within Judaism, since it's not a conversion religion.
Yeah.
Most of it is seen as like a genetically passed down religion where you're Jewish if your mother was Jewish.
Yeah.
But I think it still shows that like if someone wants to put in the time and the effort and show that this is a culture, a spiritual practice that is important to them, that Judaism is a open and welcome religion to them.
Yeah. Wow. That's really special. That's awesome. Yeah, do you feel like you've had a different experience since, I feel like there are so many judgmental people out there who will say like, well, you know, if your mom wasn't born into Judaism.
Yeah, I never really encountered that, at least in the community I lived in, because I did not live in a very Jewish community. So it's not like you had the yentas running around all up in your business.
Yeah.
We were more of the oddballs out in terms of where we lived. And also, since my mom did convert before I was born, there wasn't really any view, or before they even got married, there wasn't really any view of like, oh, well, you're not a real Jew, at least not what I experienced.
Oh, that's great.
They had a Jewish wedding. I had my bat mitzvah. Like, we went through all the ways. I had my baby naming at the temple. So all the stuff that normally two very religious people would make someone a quote-unquote real Jew.
Yeah.
Still applied to
she
me
was.
And my family.
Of course. Yeah, I love that. I always say, like, Right. I love the saying of like, with a convert, like their soul was with us at Mount Sinai. I can't speak to that. Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And you mentioned your baby name. What's your Hebrew name?
Elidova.
Oh, that's so pretty.
Yeah.
I love that.
My great grandfather on my dad's side was, oh no, not my great grandfather, my grandfather's, my dad's father, was Dove Bear, and that was his Hebrew name, so they kind of took inspiration from that, for my Hebrew name being Elidova.
Oh, that's so sweet. I loved that.
And I really like my mom's Hebrew name. Her Hebrew name is Aviva.
Oh, spring.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's pretty.
Feels like we have David, which is my dad, Aviva, my mom, and then Ellie Bear, which
is what
my name kind of translates to.
That's so cute. Oh, I love that. It's funny. My mom's name is Penina Tsipora, Tsipora butterfly.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes along with that.
Yeah.
But wow, that's so special. I wanted to circle back just to one thing you mentioned. You talked about when you were younger doing Shabbat dinners every week. Yeah. What was that like?
I think when I was young, it was something that I looked forward to because we got to have the challah, we got to have the candles. I'd always do the candle lighting with my mom, and it like was kind of a place that I had a role. And then I really got out of the habit, but now in college living on my own, I'm trying to get back into the habit because it's even more important when life is super crazy to take a time to reflect and take a break and kind of let everything that happened in the week wash over you and wash past you and start with a fresh mind.
Right. Yeah, that really is one of my favorite parts of Judaism. Like, it's just a reset and a chance to just live for yourself for a minute.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's funny we're talking about resets because today's...
Yeah,
one of the,
it must be on my mind.
One of the biggest resets we can have is just welcoming in a new year and putting in positive aspirations for what you want to accomplish, what you want to have out of the new Jewish year.
Oh, I love that. Oh my gosh. Well, I think we'll end with saying what we're hoping for the new year.
Mm-hmm.
That's cute. We'll bookmark that to come back to. I love that. As you're so right, just Rosh Hashanah, that's the ultimate new start.
Yeah.
I think that's such a beautiful thing. And speaking of new starts, I'm really struck by your mom and her new start.
Mm-hmm.
In what ways has she and her decision like inspired you and your faith, do you think?
I don't think I've really ever thought of that before. I never really saw my mom as anything besides my mom.
Yeah,
I guess. I also never, myself at least, had any type of conversion experience.
Mm-hmm.
Although I say we're religious, my parents have allowed me to kind of make my own sense of religion, of faith, of what I see in my space and my connection is with the universe.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciate.
That's nice.
So it's like at this point in my life, would I say that I think of Judaism the same way that my parents do? Probably not, but I think when you're talking about how did her decision to convert possibly influence me, is that she made the choice to
explore
and join the family of Judaism, and I guess they've given me the choice to explore my own thoughts and see where that'll take me within my own journey.
That's awesome. Was there a particular moment when you were growing up where you kind of started looking into other religions and exploring, do you think?
I think before I started looking into other religions and faiths, I started just feeling less connected to Judaism.
Right.
I think that would have probably been later elementary school, like 4th, 5th, 6th grade.
Yeah.
Just because that's when you really start learning about more of the politics of the religion, and it's focused more on the rules and the history instead of the practices and the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what was always important to me were the practices in the community.
Right.
And I felt like that was sometimes getting lost within the education.
Hmm. That's so interesting. Yeah, in terms of the practices, like, what really stuck out to you is always feeling important.
Certain holidays were always really important, specifically Passover.
Amazing.
I think it was the way that our families would celebrate Passover, but all the extended family would come together and have Seder. And it was always just a standout memory for me. It was, even though Passover is more of a serious holiday, I feel like being with family, seeing how far everyone has come to be together again, made it stand out. And even though I don't really travel with family anymore for Passover, that's still something that holds a lot more importance for me than maybe some other holidays.
I think so. I always think of it as Jewish Thanksgiving. Because
the family.
Exactly. Well, because my family would always do a giant Thanksgiving in the fall. And, you know, roughly half a year later, we would do, well, because we would host Thanksgiving, and then my aunt would host Passover in Maryland.
Right.
Yeah, so it'd be a cute little crossover there.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, wow, that's awesome.
We
didn't
really ever celebrate Thanksgiving in, like, a big way.
Mm-hmm.
We were normally traveling during Thanksgiving, so I think Passover was
our Thanksgiving. Just everyone coming together.
Yeah.
Were there elements of the Seder that you really enjoyed participating in?
Yes, actually.
Oh,
it's a really funny story. So when you open the door for Eliyahu and you leave the cup out, it's always my job to be the person that opened the door.
Oh.
And I was always so excited for it. I would always, like, run up to the door, hold it open, everyone would be singing, and I would be hearing the songs. And I remember one year, I came back to the table and the wine was gone. And I was so floored that the wine was gone. I was like, where did it go? Eliyahu was here. Like, this is insane. And my whole family was kind of giggling at me. Turns out my uncle drank it because his Hebrew name is Eliyahu.
Oh, it's so funny.
I went to open the door. I couldn't see the table. Technically, it was Eliyahu's cup. He drank the wine.
That's so funny.
And then I came back to the table, seeing that the wine was more empty, kind of swishing around, mystified in my eyes. Everyone just kind of chuckling at the innocence
of the
youngest family member.
Oh, so you're the youngest.
Yes,
I was always going to say, that was always me too. The longest time.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm not the youngest anymore.
Me too. That's so sweet with your uncle, though. Oh, my gosh. It makes me wonder about, like, other members of your extended family. Like, did any of them kind of play a role in your religious, spiritual journey?
My grandma definitely did. So all the extended family that I'm talking about are on my dad's side, since my mom's extended family is not Jewish. So my grandma, Sarah, she was quintessentially a Brooklyn Jew.
I love
it. In every sense of the word, you can think about it. And she was also the type of person that if you sat down on the bus next to her, you would be leaving that trip with a brand new best friend. And you would be getting lunches with her, and she'd be calling you on the weekend to check in. And that was just who she was.
Wow.
And I feel like in terms of, like, openness and welcoming people in as what I wanted to take away from Judaism, she was the role model that I turned to the most.
Yeah. No, that makes so much sense. And just seeing Judaism almost as, like, a vehicle for connection.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so how my grandparents were.
Yeah.
Of, like, this is just an excuse to love on someone.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
and
that's so cool.
She was also a very social butterfly, but in the best way. So it was, like, whenever she would meet someone, somehow she would know someone in their circle.
Yeah, Jewish geography, baby.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She was the queen of Jewish geography.
I love it. That's amazing.
So I think, yeah, that would probably be it. And we'd also go up to New York to visit her for, I don't remember which holidays, but for some of the holidays. Mm-hmm. And one of my cousins lives in New York too, so they would come down, and it was always just a really nice time. Yeah. But different as well.
Yeah, Brooklyn feels, I feel so different from LA.
Yeah.
Yeah, like couldn't be more different. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm just thinking about your connection to your grandma, and you mentioned, yeah, that all those people were on your dad's side.
Yeah.
Did you ever like celebrate Christian holidays with your mom's family or anything?
No. when my mom kind of explains like her Christian side, they weren't really religious at all either.
Okay.
So it was more the commercial holidays.
Yeah.
Instead of like the culturally significant or religiously significant ones.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really like we were leaving, she was leaving a lot behind, or that she really had any compulsion to follow those practices. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like it was just something she was adding, just nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome. Wow. Well, so just thinking about these things that were meaningful, right? You got Passover, you've got your parents and their journeys and your grandma. And then thinking about the context of fourth, fifth grade, you're starting to be like, well, you know, these things aren't as emphasized right now.
Yeah.
I'm not loving that. Do you think in that moment, did you like talk to anybody about how you were feeling?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think, so my grandma that I was talking about, she passed away when I was in fifth grade.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So that was a really interesting time because during sixth grade, I also got bat mitzvahed. So I had my bat mitzvah really early.
Mm.
So there were just a lot of transitions and changes that were happening around that time. Yeah, because you're learning things for the sake of becoming, like, a full member within the Jewish community kind of is what bat mitzvahs are seen as.
Right.
But I think because I had mine so young,
it didn't feel like
I was still just a child within the eyes of my congregation and everyone around me.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I felt that way at 13, you know, like.
I had my bat mitzvah the day before my 12th birthday.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah.
Is there a reason you did it so early?
My grandmother's health, the one that I've been talking about, was going down a little bit. It was harder for her to travel, so we set an early date in hopes that she would be able to be there and celebrate it with us. Unfortunately, she had an accident, and that kind of accelerated the timeline that when I got to the time for my bat mitzvah, she wasn't with us anymore.
I'm so sorry.
I remember, this is still like a very standout memory for me, when we had her burial, when we had her, what's it called? It is called a burial, right?
Yeah, a funeral.
Yeah, funeral.
Yeah,
that's what I was looking for. I definitely feel like a lot of things kind of changed at her funeral. That was one of the first times where, even though I was feeling really upset, I didn't really want to seek comfort from other people, and I was kind of distancing myself from other people, even though we were all there remembering her and her life together.
Yeah.
And I remember I had just learned some of the Torah blessings. And so after everybody left, I had a moment to myself with Grandma Sarah and my mom and my dad, where I sung the Torah blessings to her. And then later on, when it was her grave unveiling, I had learned my Haftorah portion. So I sang to her my Haftorah portion, since I figured she might not be able to be here, but I know she's still always here with me. This is probably the space that I'm going to be closest enough to her, so let me have that connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's really beautiful. You know, I don't believe in death stopping relationships.
Yeah.
I think they keep going, you know, maybe they're a little harder to hear, just a little. But God, that's really inspirational, you know, that you wanted to include her and make sure she was there.
Yeah.
Wow.
We left a chair for her open at my ceremony and my dinner as well, just because she was such a big part of me growing up. Whenever she would come visit us in California, we would play this game where after I woke up in the morning, I would run to the guest room and I would go see her. And she was Queen Mother. And I was the Queen Mother's granddaughter. And we would always just play this game. And she would help me put on her little makeup in the morning. She would tell me what to do. And it was just something really special that I don't think I appreciated as I started getting older. And I think once she wasn't with us anymore, those memories stand out a lot more, just to show about how special she was.
Wow. Yeah, that's so beautiful. I am, in terms of, you know, kind of what I said before, of a relationship not ending, do you still, you know, do you still feel that connection, and do you still love her?
I definitely still love her. That's never going to be something that I don't feel. I have a very complicated relationship with grieving and everything. At the end of last year, so before college, I lost my other grandmother.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So things like that sometimes are, I don't like thinking about them. But when I see myself kind of trying to reconnect, at least to the Jewish community at Lafayette, I can imagine that she's, like, smiling and happy that I'm still holding on to something.
Wow. I think she'd be so proud of you.
Yeah.
And all the work you're doing. And really just looking into religion in general. It's all good stuff.
I mean, looking into religion in general, that's always something that I was curious about. I always wanted to know more about other religions, or, like, why religions thought things, or what different parts of religions would think about. And fifth grade was my last year within a religious school. After that,
I
went to secular schools. So I think that also kind of spurred on the me thinking about at least God and higher powers in a different way, because I was really given the space.
You were out of the bubble.
Yeah, I was out of the bubble. I was given the space to actually think about what it meant to me, not being told what it should mean to me as a Jewish person.
Did you feel kind of talked at before, you mean?
I don't think consciously I did, but after, like I said, I looked back at some of the workbooks and having absolutely no memory writing or thinking or believing any of the things that
it's a little brainwashed.
I had to prescribe in and talking about what I say when I pray to God. I don't think ever once can I point out in my head a time that I actually sat down and thought about talking to God.
You know, it's so funny. A quote I talk about all the time is how I was in a class about Confucianism 2 years ago.
And Professor Ma.
Yeah, great class. Definitely take it if, you know, if it's offered and everything. She's awesome. I love her, but that class specifically, great. We had a debate at the end of the class, and it was basically, is Confucianism a religion? And which is so interesting. I would tell you it is. I understand why people don't think that. But a lot of the arguments people are making, which it's a shame. A lot of people I find who take religious studies classes do it to check off Common Core requirements, you know, which is a bummer for people like us who genuinely love it. But a lot of these people were just saying, like, well, people who believe in Confucianism don't believe in the traditional God, so no.
Right.
And it's like, that's not what makes something a religion.
Yeah.
It made me really upset. And I did some research on it. And I came back and I said, do you think Judaism's a religion? 52% of Jews are atheists or agnostic.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you about that. You know, and I mention that every time I lead services, I try and recontextualize the language because mm-hmm. I know it can make a lot of people uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
of like revering, worshiping a god.
Yeah.
And it's something I personally am down for, but it's so important for me to make it more inclusive
mm-hmm.
and to say like, hey, here's another way to think about this. If
yeah.
you don't believe in a traditional god, that's so valid. That's mm-hmm. cool. I, you know, there's a way to think about this in a way of like, gratitude to the universe, gratitude to
yeah.
yourself, to your community. You know, I really love that multidimensional approach.
Yeah.
But
I feel like that really touches upon my own beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't exactly believe in a god, that
yeah.
there is some one being entity up there that kind of does and dictates everything that happens in the world.
Right.
That's not right. really something I believe. I don't know if that's something I really have ever believed, but
right.
as I've gotten older, I've gained the language to be able to actually express what I think.
Yeah.
I would say, like, where my beliefs of Judaism, my practices come in is when I go to services, when I reflect on what it means to be a Jewish person, that is what brings me so much closer to the people that aren't here anymore.
Yeah.
And that is that connection, that's that relationship that you're saying
mm-hmm.
never goes away.
No.
That's, I think, what
yeah, chills.
My Jewish practices give me. It brings me comfort in something that's familiar.
Yeah.
It gives me guidance when I'm lost sometimes. But at the same time, it's not something that I allow dictate my decisions
no.
or every part of my life.
Right. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's one of my favorite things about Judaism that you really, I read this book that totally changed my life. And for the love of everything, I can never remember what it's called. it was written by, actually, Michelle Obama's head speechwriter.
Oh, okay.
And it's fabulous. Next time I'll find the title, I'll show
okay.
you. And she kind of said, like, I turned away from Judaism because I was overwhelmed
yeah.
and I didn't like everything that was being said, being put on me. And she said, but I realized I like some of it and
mm-hmm.
some of it applies to my life.
Yeah.
So why can't I just take what applies to my life and leave the rest?
Exactly.
And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Because I'll tell you, I love shrimp. I love it. I still get guilty every once in a while. And then I'll think, why?
Yeah.
You know, like, is that serving me? Is
yeah.
that helping my spiritual development to feel guilty
mm-hmm.
about eating some delicious
or it's
cocktail
like
shrimp?
The idea of Shabbat. It's like, I love the idea of Shabbat and taking time off. But at the same time, I want to live my life. I want to not be constrained to specific rules of what I can and cannot do
right.
during what is considered a period of rest and reflection.
I think sometimes
like,
it can feel arbitrary, you
yeah.
know, like, no electronics because it's work. It's like watching
no.
TikToks is not work to me, you know? Like,
no flipping a light switch because it's work.
Like, come on.
Right.
But like walking 5 miles isn't work. I don't know.
Exactly. It's where the line is drawn.
Right. And I think if following those rules adds value to someone's life, fantastic for
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
You know, like awesome, couldn't be happier for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not what gets me.
It's not
me.
What adds value in my life.
Exactly, exactly. I love that. Yeah, and in terms of kind of exploring and seeing what works and what makes sense for you, did that kind of started once you were out of Jewish day school,
yeah,
do you think?
That started
yeah.
once I was out of Jewish day school. I think it became a lot more prominent in middle school once I started questioning my sexuality.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sexuality and religion, those little internal debates can always get really complicated.
How are those linked for you?
For me, in my own mind, they're not.
Okay.
If someone asks
yeah.
me for a religious argument that I would relate to, I would say every person develops and is meant to be who they are. There's not one right or wrong way for a person to be.
Right.
People change, people grow, and whatever your path is the path that is intended for you to take.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that.
I wouldn't necessarily say that comes directly from Judaism as much as my own just spiritual beliefs.
Yeah.
which that is something I believe, but for myself, I don't necessarily see that as being a religious argument.
Do you think, where do you think that spirituality came from, though?
I think that spirituality came from a place of being lost.
Mm-hmm.
Middle school and high school were a really hard time for me. I was having a really hard time with friends. COVID hit. There were just a lot of places that I was feeling disconnected, apathetic, but also not really knowing what could bring me out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would see different practices that people would have in terms of what major religions would consider paganism, but what I just consider spirituality.
Right.
Paganism in its own term should be re-examined.
Definitely. Yeah, but what were aspects of that really got you through those tough times?
I think what it was that got me through was the idea of patience and compassion, taking time to discover what there is for you, accepting that it's okay to feel lost and that clarity will come to you when you're ready for it, that you don't always have to have an answer for why something is happening or for what you have to do to something, but to take time and wait for some of those answers to reveal themselves. I think that is the perspective that first started leaning me towards more of a spiritual idea, since looking at my own faith that I grew up in, I wasn't really getting the answers that I was looking for. I wasn't feeling like it was providing me whatever it is I was looking for, whatever I felt that I was missing.
Right, the comfort you needed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so then you found that really within yourself and through reflection.
Yeah. I found it within myself, because it's not like someone else could find that for me. In my own belief, if you need to rely on other people to find peace within yourself, or that if you can't have peace without other people,
it's a little
then
scary.
it's not really long lasting.
Right.
It's not really your peace. And I had a hard time with that.
Well, I guess I'm just wondering, like, if you had any sources of inspiration, like meditation or specific teachings or anything.
I actually had a person who was a source of inspiration.
Awesome.
Her name is Mustang.
Cool.
This was someone who was a camp counselor for me when I was in high school, and then became a coworker for me when I went into college.
Oh, that's
fun. I think it just opened my eyes to a different form of unity that I hadn't thought of before. Mustang is an Indigenous person, so the perspective that she took was very much seeing the spiritual powers and the guidances in nature. And in the beginning, I was a little resistant to what she was telling me, kind of how my mom was resistant to what I was telling her when I first tried starting explaining some of this. But after high school, when I started working at the summer camp with her, I feel like that's when things really solidified into the spiritual practices that I have today. I can get into those a little bit.
I was just going to say, you read my mind.
So one of those big things is energy work, meditation and reflection. So it's an expensive habit, but, or hobby, but a one that brings me a lot of peace is, crystals. And I know what some people say about crystals, but what I believe is that if you're in a place where you're lost and you need guidance, crystals are going to find you. You can't choose if you want to connect. It's something where it's almost like something from the other side is reaching out to you and bringing you what it is that you are missing. That's what I first felt when I first got into crystals.
So did Mustang show you crystals?
Yeah, so we went to a farmer's market together, And we had already been talking about what types of things she liked, different things that she would do. And at this farmer's market, there was a table of a lady who was selling crystals. And I was looking at them. I was picking some different ones up in my hands, seeing what I felt, seeing what felt comfortable. And I was just overcome with this feeling of, I don't want to put this down.
Wow.
It was like I picked it up and it felt right.
Hmm.
It felt like this is centering, this is calmness, this is a quiet that I haven't experienced in a long time.
Wow.
And that has now started a very large collection that I have in use within myself. But that's what I think I would say tipped the scales into taking the thoughts that I had about spirituality into practices as well.
Wow. Yeah, that's really special. Do you feel like what you were saying about how the crystals will find you when you when you need them, do you feel like since you first found them, something like that has happened?
To get to that point, I have to kind of take you through a little bit more the development of my practices,
I guess you could say. Yeah, amazing.
So once I got into crystals and I was starting to kind of be more in tune with feeling different energies that I couldn't really explain in any way that, like, science would be able to explain or that, like, theologists would be able to explain or anything like that. It really is just a connection, a power that I feel from somewhere else that I started wanting to get into tarot.
Oh, I love
tarot reading. So I do practice tarot, and it is something that is a good part of my life. But when I first started practicing, I think I was surprised by how much it could connect me to people.
Hmm.
That people said my intuition when reading cards was very precise, almost scary sometimes with how it felt like I could connect and see what a person was feeling and going through what I saw in the cards. And this was in the beginning of college. I think I liked the idea that this could connect me to people, that I started using tarot incorrectly. And I started to want to try and give people readings that they would want to hear, that would make them feel good compared to what maybe I was actually seeing, what guidance I was actually receiving.
So you kind of doctor it a little. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And after this happened, I suddenly did not feel the connection anymore.
Because you weren't fully authentic and fully
because
present.
I wasn't being open to what I was actually seeing. I was, I guess, trying to be a bit of a people pleaser.
Wow.
That whoever was out there guided me, realized that letting me do this was only going to bring more harm to myself.
Right.
Than it would
it's
any
not you.
Type of growth. Exactly. It
wow.
wasn't authentic. And so for a while I was feeling actually really lost and disconnected from my practice. I wasn't really connecting with my crystals anymore. It felt like it was just a collection for the sake of collecting. And I think I lost what was important to me, what first got me into crystals.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of when you say they call to you when you need them. They also protect you from when you're using them wrong.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, so it's like, from whatever, this is where I don't exactly understand fully what my beliefs are. Some people have very solidified ideas of an other world, an other side, a higher power that's giving this guidance. I don't really have a clarified idea of what that is. I just know it's coming from something that is greater than me.
Mm.
And I think that's enough for me to be able to accept it. And I was in Big Bear this summer, and I was talking to someone, and I was explaining kind of how I was feeling lost and, like, how unsettling it was, and that I was trying all these things to bring it back, and I just couldn't. And what this person said to me was, it's not that you've lost it. It's not that your intuition isn't there. It's not that these people aren't here for you. It's that right now, looking towards other guidance is not what you need.
You just need to look within.
Yeah. So it's like...
chills.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like, you need to figure out kind of why it is you are doing this, what it means to you, and when the time is right, that eye will be opened up again, pretty much. Mm. So it's not that it's gone,
wow.
It's being blocked. And it's not necessarily a blockage that I can fix. It's just going to take time.
So this was like a spiritual practitioner kind of?
It was a Reiki practitioner.
Oh, I love Reiki. Yeah. My grandma did Reiki.
Yeah.
Oh,
so it was a Reiki
cool.
practitioner. And it was just, it was really nice, I think, hearing from someone that it wasn't that there was something wrong with me that was causing this, but that somewhere else out there, this wasn't what was meant for me at the moment. And when I got back to school, I think I was a lot more patient with myself.
Mm.
And I remember one night, the first week of school, I was having a really hard time for a lot of reasons. But let's just say I was lost and scared and confused.
Yeah.
And I thought, maybe let's try something. Let's try something.
Wow.
So... I went to my deck of oracle cards.
I love oracle
cards. So I read tarot and I do oracle cards, but I normally only do oracle cards for myself. That's more of a personal guidance compared to working through
someone
else.
I feel like tarot's more confusing in my
Tarot is definitely more confusing. Mm-hmm. That's also kind of what would get in the way of the intuition, is
right.
that I would see something and I would second guess what I thought
mm-hmm.
it meant,
mm-hmm.
even if deep down I really did know.
Yeah.
What I would take away from it, I'd always second guess of, oh, but if you don't like this, it could be this too. And that's kind of what started getting me down.
Getting murky.
Yeah, getting murky, kind of putting charcoal in the water, mixing it up so that I couldn't really, the clarity that I felt before wasn't there. But so this night, I turned to the oracle cards, first time I had done that in months, genuinely.
Wow.
And I think all I was thinking when I was shuffling the cards is, I'm really lost, and I'm scared, and I need a direction.
Right.
And that was the intention that I was thinking.
That's so powerful.
And the first interesting thing is when I took the deck, the first card on the back that I saw was, it said Ask Body, which was really interesting because I was physically having issues at that time. So it was saying, like, take a moment, think about what physically you need.
Mm.
And then the next card I've pulled was versatility.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
What
versatility.
Oh, okay.
Versatility, sorry.
I thought it was just something I didn't
you
know.
You can fix that up. Yeah.
49.
So the first card that I, or the only card that I actually pulled that night was versatility. And at first, I'm like, I don't really know what this means.
Yeah.
And then all decks come with a little guidebook and things.
I was just going to say, did you look at the
Yeah,
book?
So I looked at the guidebook, and pretty much it was talking about how I was stuck, I was lost, and what I needed to do was take a different outlook on what was happening.
Right.
That what I had convinced myself of was no longer going to get me somewhere, and that I would have to kind of change my perspective to find clarity, to gather a semblance of balance and stability. And honestly, after that reading and just feeling like something saw me and that something saw what I was going through, a lot of the insecurity, a lot of the fear and anxiety that I was feeling kind of just went away.
Wow.
Not to say I don't still feel anxious. Everyone has different times of anxiety, but that overwhelming kind of crushing feeling suddenly felt controllable.
That's really beautiful because it's almost like you accepted that kind of what you were saying with this summer, that not everything has to have an answer and
Exactly.
that can be the answer for now.
Yeah.
Wow. That's such a beautiful point, and I'm really touched and struck by just thank you for being so open,
Yeah.
and what a beautiful journey you've had. I feel like just the two pieces of the culturally Jewish, the spiritual lens, the inner self lens, like there's just so much to your story, and it's so
Yeah.
beautiful.
And I think just another interesting note, you've probably seen that I wear this necklace every single day.
I love
Since viewers cannot see,
it.
it is just a silver chain and it has two pendants on it. One of them is a Jewish star that I got from Israel.
Love it.
And this I see as like my cultural side, my familial side, what keeps me grounded in my identity. And then the other side, which was the original necklace before I added on the Jewish star, is a Celtic journey knot.
Oh,
It
that's so
has
cool.
garnet in it, but the garnet's not necessarily the important part. The important part is the journey knot. And I got this when I was in high school, and I think this is also probably one of the things that started shifting my gaze somewhere else, is that what this represents is everyone goes through different things in life. Everyone has a journey. Everyone has experiences. The experiences themselves are not as important as how you incorporate those experiences into your existence. So I think this always just reminds me that, yes, everyone has been through things. I've been through things. But what is important is how I allow those things to affect me and how I take every experience I've gone through as a point of growth and reflection, which
Absolutely.
can be really hard to do
I
sometimes,
bet.
but I think that's also why I wear this necklace all the time, is it's just a point of centering, of knowing I'm who I am today because of what happens to me, but also I've survived and I've gotten through every other
And no
thing
one thing
before.
defines you.
Exactly. No one experience or thing around me has defined me. What defines me is what I make of those things.
That's so inspirational. Thank you so much
Of
for telling us all about you, all about your heart and soul. Before we jump to concluding with our thoughts on Rosh Hashanah, because I love that idea of ending with that, is there anything else we didn't talk about that you'd like to?
Let me think on that for a second.
Of
Let me just
course,
think
of
on that one for a
course.
second. Anything we didn't talk about?
I loved coming full circle.
Yeah. I feel like just before we have our conclusion, kind of an ending thought from everything that we have talked about, is that it sounds like I have these ideas put together, but
It's what you have right
everything,
now.
right, but everything is a journey
It's
and
evolving.
everything is fluid. Exactly. It's evolving. And it's not that one day I just woke up and decided,
No. I
this is
mean,
who I am and this is what's going to be me.
there's a reason these conversations aren't like infographics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is why I love tapping into the childhood and the way COVID changed things,
Yeah.
the college journey, like every element of someone's being and someone's life,
Yeah.
because it's just every impact means something. Every
Yeah.
experience twists the journey a little bit,
Yeah.
and no one's journey is over. I think even in death, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in an end.
Yeah, I don't exactly know what there is after death, but I do know that there's something.
I was gonna say I'm not totally sure either, but I don't believe in absolutely nothing.
Oh, actually, to that point, just reminded me of something, because we were talking about death earlier and how both of my grandparents passed away within my recent memory of childhood and then early adulthood, is that when we're saying, like, they're never really gone, and when I say, where does my guidance come from, I think sometimes it really hits me that my guidance, my protection might be coming from them, might be coming from the people that have left us.
Yeah.
And I think just something that stands out to me is my senior year, I was in a car accident with my dad.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
We were driving to where I volunteer, and it was raining. Someone hydroplaned across the lot lanes, and
oh, God.
It was pretty close to a head-on collision.
Oh,
but
geez.
Coming out of it, my dad and I were fine. The other person was fine. All of us were safe. And I remember I was sitting in the, like, ambulance truck. They were just checking me out, making sure everything is there. And I look up in the sky, and there's a very clear and prominent double rainbow. And when I told this to my mom, she said, that's Grandma Sarah and Nana up there.
Oh.
They might not be here, but that's you, and that's Grandma Sarah, Grandma Nana, that's you and Daddy. That is your guys' lives right there. And I think that's kind of like, people call it different things, but connections with something we don't see anymore. I feel like that's a really, it's just standout example to me of how you're not, they're never not there. You might not see them, you might not know where they are, but they're never not there with you.
Yeah, it's true, it's
yeah.
true. It's, right, every day, I believe in that so fiercely. Right, they're protecting you, they're watching over you, you can talk to them.
Yeah. I know my mom talks to them when we were in Israel, and we were at the Wailing Wall. The prayer that my mom put into the Wailing Wall was not actually a prayer, but it was a letter to her mother and to my dad's mother. Just kind of saying how thankful she was for their guidance, and that was a connection that she felt, that that's how she can communicate with them. She still talks to her mom. I might not necessarily talk to them, but I will think about them, and I know that when I think about them, wherever they are, that they feel that too.
That's so beautiful. Yeah, thank you for opening up about that. It's so important. You know, really, kind of sub-mission of my interviews is destigmatizing grief.
Yeah.
Because I think so often people don't want to talk about it. People get anxious to bring the mood down. But it's such a blessing when we hear those stories, because that's how people live on.
Yeah.
You know, and you talking about Grandma Sarah and Nana, like, they're here with us because you bring their stories.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Wow. Well, thank you so much. What are you manifesting? In the vein of, I kind of associate, like, oracle cards with manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
So in that vein, I don't know if you feel the same way.
I think a lot of people look at tarot and oracle cards as bringing in something that maybe isn't here yet.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, the way that I see it is bringing understanding and guidance to
what's
things that
there.
Are here.
Interesting.
And that might just be my vision. I don't really see things about the future, but understanding the past, interpreting the past, bringing guidance to what you feel and don't understand.
Right.
That's what I use my spiritual practice for.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Well, in that case.
Yeah, so what
yeah.
what do I want
for the
to
year
bring
ahead.
Into this year for Rosh Hashanah?
Shana Tova, Mitzvah.
Shana Tova,
yeah.
And Shana Tova to everyone out there who is listening.
Amen.
Let's see. I mean, in the real full circle of what we started off talking about is new connections, new relationships, and new beginnings.
Yeah.
That's what I want to bring into.
Absolutely.
This new world, this new year, not stagnation, but movement and growth. And I don't know, just focusing on living.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I would say something similar. I really just getting to know myself more.
Mm-hmm.
That's my goal.
Yeah.
Well, Elise, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
And once again, thank you so much for listening, and Shana Tova.